traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Welcome, equestrians of all breeds. This is Scott Miller, founder of the International Equine Network. Glad to have you here today. It's an exciting weekend for us. Today's show is going to be primarily on how they get there and at the bio, our thoroughbred show. It's going to be amazing to see what happens here this weekend. We've got so many things going on. And I tell you, there's one thing here that if you guys could ever get a hold of is the Daily Racing Form. The Daily Racing Form is thoroughbred horseman's Bible, you might want to say. Today, we're going to be going through the past performances of the Breeders' Cup horses. Just going to highlight everything. In today's Racing Form's Breeders' Cup Advance Past Performance sheet, you have the lifetime past performances for pre-entered horses, the buyer speed ratings, the time form ratings from foreign shippers, which is very, very important because I believe we have 27-plus foreign shippers this year in the Breeders' Cup. They have comments and odds for the pre-entered horses, key prep races, analysts of race chart, and analysts of key foreign prep races. And again, the emphasis is on the foreign prep races. They're going to play a major role this year in the Breeders' Cup. I tell you, all 14 Breeders' Cup races, it could be any one of them. Sure, there are some outstanding horses in each race, but the talent is just so overwhelming. The prep to get them here to the Breeders' Cup has been phenomenal for the horsemen all over the world. And what I see is happening is major upsets this year. It's going to be very interesting to go through and see. Now, we're going to start with the Juvenile Turf Sprint, Friday, November 6th. Leslie Ward has half of the eight top-rated contenders in this race. Got four horses in this race. And, you know, so his sprint, it's going to be pretty good. Now, not saying that they're all favorites, but, you know, he's got a couple some long shots in there and everything. So, you know, that's what we'll be looking at from there. Now, projections for this 5.5 for a long race with is Golden Pal. Likely favorite. Ward won this race last year at Santa Anita with four-wheel drive. So that would be, you know, you got to look at Leslie Ward real close in this race. And then we'll go to the Juvenile Phillies Turf. Brad Cox, who won two Breeders' Cup races last year, has two of the top contenders in this one-mile race in Aunt Pearl and Emerald. Both the last time out were winners in key stake races on the Kentucky Circuit. Brad has just really come along with his horses, and it seems that Brad can get a horse to the winner's circle from 5.5 furlongs to a route of ground. It's just unbelievable how solid his training is and his stable and his staff is. You know, so anytime you see a Brad Cox horse, you got to really give it a good look because he's not playing around. He comes to win races, and that's exactly what he's doing. So that's going to be an interesting one. Worth Nothing, 10 of the top 12 Juvenile Phillies Turf winners, has been an American-based horse for this race. So an American-based horse might have a shot at this, but it's going to be a race from beginning to end on the Juvenile Turf. This race is a race that I really do like because it's wide open. It's just, you know, when you see horses this evenly matched, it makes you wonder how can you win the race? Is it the jockey? Is it luck? Is the way the race sets up? Nine of the 13 juvenile winners, turf winners, have been from Europe. So, you know, that says a lot there when you go to handicapping the race. You got to really, you know, look at them. But instead of letting something like that sway me, what I like to do is just look at the race overall. You got to put a lot of things together in it. You know, the jockey, the trainer, you know, the races that got them there. That's the thing that I go back and look at. Are they peaking at the right time? You know, and of course, you're looking at young horses. These young horses, the time they get to this stage of the game, hopefully they're seasoned enough, you know, and have enough experience, you know, to handle whatever is thrown at them. You know, you get the first turf in your face and you know, full field. And that's what we're looking at. It is a strong field. So you're going to have to be racing from the time that gate opens until the time you hit the finish line. So that's the juvenile turf. That might be the best race on the whole card for the 2 days, where, you know, a better can make some money if you're a betting person. Now, I'm not a betting person. I just like to play them on paper. And if this race really intrigued me, and it's going to be wide open, you know, for everybody in that race. The juvenile field is 4 of the 8 expected starters. Princess Miller, Simply Ravishing, and Day Out of the Office, and Girl Daddy are all in the beat in a combined total of 11 races. This one could be some. Songbird was a favorite in 2015 and had all the way, was led all the way in the field of 10. So, you know, it could be one of those races that, again, you know, we're talking about young horses. They get out on the front end, and you might not ever catch them. You know, that's just the way, you know, some of these young horses are. But yet again, you never can tell what happened. They're young. They're trying. It's first time in front of a, you know, a stacked field like that. And one of the things that I was talking about the other day here at the farm is we have our horses coming back from up north. It's interesting here because this is the first real time in their training and what they're doing in their career that they're getting on a track with a lot of horses. A lot of times the horses are, you know, are just new to the track and they're not seeing a lot of different things. And, you know, it's all new to them. And so these fields are going to be fairly full. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they react to it. Now, one of the things that I think helps all of is the crowd at the racetrack. Now, since there's no fans, you know, at the races, you have to take that element out of because a lot of times when you see the horses at the track, they get pumped up. They see the crowd. They feel the excitement, the electricity in the air. And they're not going to be able to do that. You know, it's just a regular day, you might say, of training. As far as they know, they're going out there just like they do every day, you know, for a quick gallop. You know, and, but yet it's a race day. You know, so they don't have all that excitement. They don't have the tension, you know, the build-up to a race as they normally would. So, you know, sometimes it's just kind of tough on them. It throws them to the wolves. And, you know, this is not training, not today, guys. You know, this is it's the real deal. And so that's going to be interesting to see with all these young horses. And I tell you, now this is down to the juvenile for the Colts and Gelders. And we have the documentary going, How They Get There. And this is all part of our documentary. It'll be in the documentary, How They Get There. And we literally start our road to the Kentucky Derby 2021 with the juvenile. Now, there are other Derby races that lead up to the juvenile, but we're just kind of like putting those aside because of the COVID. Things have changed. But now we're back on a regular schedule. We're back on the road to the 2021 Kentucky Derby. All the races, state races leading up, prep races leading up to the Derby are all back on schedule as they would normally be. And so the juvenile is going to be a good one. There's a horse called Jackie's Warrior. Looks like one of the heaviest favorites over the past 2 days go to the track. I tell you, this horse is something else. Steve Ashmeason has this horse, and this horse is unbelievable. It's going to be something to see. Jackie's Warrior. Again, like I said, it could be anybody in any of these races. Any of them. And that's what we're trying to stress. You got to turn it into watch the Breeders' Cup this year because every race is going to be wild. And that's what we hope everybody does. And so that Future Friday is going to be great. You'll see Stars of the Future all day on Friday. You have to tune in to watch them and see just where they're going and how they're going. And that's the main thing, that you got to do. Tune in. And then on Saturday, November the 7th. See, I'm already talking May already. And all, but November 7th, Gainey, Bob Baffert's horse, this horse is a freaking nature. This horse can just run like there's no tomorrow, and is very very good horse. Unfortunately, she's had a few setbacks, and we don't know if Bob has corrected that. I'm sure he has, but there's a lot to this horse. This horse can really, really run. She's going to be the favorite, I would think, in this. There's a lot of good horses in there against her that have really tested her. The last time, from a third-place finish in September 4th, Kentucky Oaks, we don't know what happened to her there. If it was Churchill or, just what, but... she's going to be a very good, solid, heavy favorite. And if it were me and I were betting, the sure bet of the day, I would have to bet this story. I would have to bet better, that's for sure. And I'm not a betting man, but if I were going to bet, that's where my $2 is. We've got the Dirt Mile coming up, which is going to be phenomenal. Race. What I like about the Dirt Mile is you've got to have the condition for the distance and you've got to have the speed for the sprint. And this race could play out in a lot of ways. You might get somebody out there that's going to be good from the get-go and you're going to have to just stay right with them. The horse might get out there and you hook them and it's a dogfight or a whole mile. And that's a tough mile to that's for sure. The 2015 at Keeneland, Leon's Map rallied from fifth in a field of 11 to win the race and set a track record, Breeders' Cup record there. So you can win it from coming off the pace, but you got to be a special horse. And Leon's Map is an unusual horse. He was a horse that just was unbelievable. Friend of mine, Nick Bush, got off the horse, and every day I see him, he tells me, Scotty, he said, this horse is good. And so far this year, none of my friends that are in the Dirt Mile, that are exercise riders, have gotten, have come up and said, hey, this is a good horse. He said, they're solid, and they haven't used the word good yet. And I think what they're wanting to do is just, play it out today, tomorrow, and Saturday morning before they stamp them. He's a good horse, for this race. They're all solid, they're all fit, they're all ready, and this is a true athlete of the thoroughbred industry. It is the mile, because you got to combine speed, with racetrack savvy, the jockey. There's a lot of things you got to do in this race. And I think it's going to be a good race also, which all of them should be. But the dirt mile is probably the most athletic of all the races. The turf sprint is going to be an interesting race. The 5-year-old mare got Stormy head into this race, and I think it's going to be her last hurrah because she's getting ready to go ahead to the Kingland sale here coming up in November, November 8th. It's the November sale at Bass Camp there. I think let's see, what is her sale number in there? But this mare can run. She's been solid all along. She's done everything they've asked of her, and I think it's going to be one of those horse races that she's going to go out. She's number 168 in the November sale at King Got Stormy, so it'll be interesting to follow her, you know, from this race on into the sale and see how she goes. If she wins this race, it's certainly going to add a lot of value to her. If she runs bad, it's not going to take anything away from her. Look at this mare. It's just unbelievable. That would be one to watch. And I got Stormy, number 168, and the team fails in November. I'm actually up there. So I'm going to be not betting on her, but I'm going to be watching her. As it sales. Now we go to the sprint. The sprint, CZ Rocket. I like the name, and I think this horse is a rocket. It's set a record at Kingland in July for 6.5 furlongs at 1 minute and 15 flat up there. So that was good. And then Mercoma, which was going to be a horse I thought could be at it, got a little bit of a fever and had been scratched out of the sprint this year. I hate to see that, but I think that CZ Rocket is going to have this one. You got to be. So I think that's what will happen. And then the Philly and Bear Turf is going to be, I think, a TV moment on the Philly and Bear Turf. The East Coast contention of Rushing Flower, Sister Charlie, and Mean Mary will be challenged by Euros Invaders, Cayenne Pepper, Peaceful. Those are the two that are coming from Europe. I think that they're going to have to be Cayenne Pepper and Peaceful. Those look pretty solid to me. They had a good race schedule leading up to Saturday. So that's going to be a tough one. To turf, anything can happen. The mile, this looks like another real scramble with Ivor and the Chad Brown trio of Raging Bull, Guinea, and Digital. Chad Brown, whenever you go to race against Chad Brown, I don't care whether you race in go-karts, whether you race in turtles or horses, if Chad Brown's involved with him, this guy comes in to solid. Chad is a phenomenal trainer. He's consistent, and he doesn't play around. You know, he has horses in the right spot. And, you know, a lot of times trainers will, you know, have a horse ready to run, but, you know, it might be a little, questionable if you could beat the field. And no matter how many horses Chad enters in the same race, any one of these three that he has could win this race. So that's why Chad does what he does. He's a great trainer. Multiple owners, and everybody's got a fair shot with Chad there. I tell you that this staff, we're looking at Mama May Girl This is going to be her last start with the Brad Cox. This mile and an eighth race, it could have a photo finish. Could have a photo finish in there. A Swiss skydiver, winner of the October 3rd previous, would be the second choice. And if Ken McPhee opts to for the distaff instead of the classic with this. It's going to be interesting to see. Cherry Pete, the Pete, this guy is a pretty good breeder of horses. You know, to come in and to win the Preakness with her and then come back, you know, and we'll find out exactly, you know, what he's going to do on Saturday. It's a tough horse, won the Preakness. And, you know, that gives you a lot of food for thought right there. Then we'll go to the turf. And Aiden O'Brien has a pair of, I think this might be Aiden's best year to date for Breeders' Cup races. He's got Magical and Mogul. Magical is a horse that is magical. I think you're going to see a lot of things go on with this horse. And I think he will bring shrewd European-style racing to the turf here at King. And I think you'll see this horse come from out of the pack and run them down at the wire. I think this horse is going to truly be magical and get the job done. He's going to instill the European style of racing. I think it sets up perfect for him to do that. And I think you'll see this horse running right at the wire and past the wire. It's going to be interesting. One thing worth noting, European runners have won 11 of the last 15 runnings on the turf. And so that tells you a lot, you know, about the race in itself. Not saying taking anything away from the American horses. I think what this says is that field is pretty much well evenly matched. And we got to get our American horses into sync with the European horses because the way they run, they start and, you know, it's a slow go, but at the end they come running. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, but I do think that Magical will be the horse to beat. And he really looks good this year. And then in the classic, I'd like to check out the Bob Baffert right here and now. Bob Baffert has changed a few things. Bob has had some interesting situations over the last year or two with his horses. And everybody in the horse business can know a little bit about that. But Bob has changed some things and checking on things. And true Bob Baffert form, he's ready to go. He's ready to race. And he comes into the classic. It's going to be interesting. He's got Improbable, Maximum Security, and Kentucky Derby winner authentic. And I think that this sets up pretty good for Bob. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think we could see a 1-2, maybe even a 1-2-3 finish for Bob in the class. That's very, very realistic with him in there. It's going to be interesting to see. We have Tis the Law in there. Tis the Law is a tough horse. But like we said before in earlier shows, you know, getting horses to the Derby and the COVID that we had changed training plans all the way around. And it was very difficult for horses to get consistent, you know, get on a proper plan. The one thing was for sure that back in June, July, everything in the horse business and thoroughbred business seemed like it was going to kind of even out, get on an even keel. We started getting back to normal training. get back on a normal training schedule for the breeder stuff. And that really helped. And it was a hard job for the trainers to do because you really didn't know what was going on. You didn't know how, long this thing was going to last, if there was going to be racing in Belmont or Keeneland or Churchill or Pimlico or any of Santa Anita and any of the other tracks. And so that played a big part in training up to the breeder stuff. And I think a lot of the trainers at some given time and point during the summer said, okay, time out. Let's start pointing for races in November where the COVID might be easing up, might be back to normal. And basically that's what's happened is the training of the horses, the racing, the different tracks open has gotten back to normal. And so that's what we were saying, everything about, the horse industry, to date, is that, here you go. We're back to normal. We're back on a regular schedule. And so I was just thinking this morning while I was eating breakfast, I said, it's got to be something phenomenal to see the horses that we've had do what they've done. Certainly the Derby was important this year. I don't know if this year's Derby was taken a little lightly or if it was not as important. The Derby's always important, but, we just really haven't had time to adjust and say, yes, I have a Derby one. We don't know, but we're going to find out exactly what kind of horse Authentic is today or Saturday, because he's the Derby winner. He's going to be the one that everybody's going to be looking to as the favorite. But we're going to find out and everything, because you got a lot on the line on Saturday. But speaking of everything that we've done up to this date, we were looking at all the statistics. The handle and number of races were up in October, and that's very good. That is very good. The Equibase people said the wagering on U.S. races was up 19.7% to nearly $930 million. While the number for races increased almost 3.6 to 2,852 thoroughbred races per unit. This number of race days and the amount of starts had a slight increase. This October had 340 race days, six more than last year, and there were 234 more starts compared to a year ago, totaling 22,410 starts last month. So that's telling me a lot about the thoroughbred industry. The tracks have all come together. They've got a COVID protocol out. They put their minds together, all the tracks did. And now they know. They keep it in mind, protocol. And it's worked because it's part of our daily routine now. The horse racing. So now that we're in the flow, we got a normal flow every day. It's been adjusted compared to not having COVID, but it's worked. And the statistics are proving that. What they're doing. We had major fall meets that took place in Belmont and Santa Anita during the month of October. And that helped the trainers and the owners and the breeders, and certainly the television and radio aspect of the thoroughbred business. It got into a normal pattern. You could go to your sponsors. You could go to your advertisers. You could recreate your contracts with what you can and can't do for them. The television and radio end of it 2 months ago was up 300%. They have all different outlets now. You have social media, you have cable, you have internet, you have major networks. and even INTV.org. You have us, and what we're doing is distribution. Now, you know, I'm not going to walk into any racetrack or any network and say, hey, you know, this is what I can do. But I am a part of the system. I'm part of what is making everything work out there. It's access. It's the distribution. Where can you find us? You know, you can find us on BBS. You can find us on our website. I'm not saying that I'm pulling in a lot of people, if any at all. But the thing of it is that it's all about distribution. And that's basically what the horse industry of Albury can realize, that it's distribution. And so people like me, long, small, is a part of that, and there's some accessibility to a multitude of equestrian events like we do here at the International Equine Network. And also, let's get back here to these the dollars. That's what I like to get back to. October 1st, we're $90,845,000. They were only down 1.2% compared to a year ago. You know, so that is a lot. That's a lot. Shows a lot for the racing industry that we're doing here. So I was really pleased with it. I think a lot of that has to do with the distribution. You know, it's been off-track betting, like the Twin Spires and Express Bet, you know, the people are going to. And actually, in all honesty, it's kind of convenient for the race fan. You don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about, you know, getting into to the tracks. You know, so it's kind of convenient for you. You can make your own grandstand at your house. You know, instead of a man cave, you might have a grandstand cave for horse racing, you know, at your house. So I think that's something that's going to stick with us. I think what's going to happen, eventually, when this COVID is over and you can go out and, you know, go to public events such as horse racing and sporting events, I think what's going to happen is it's going to go back to like it used to be, you know, 25 years ago, to where you plan to go to the races on Saturday. You made a big deal out of it. You know, you'd come get off on Friday night and you'd get your daily racing form. You would go over you know, what you're going to see them the next day, and, you know, you get all dressed up, and you go out and have a nice dinner and spend an enjoyable day, you know, at the race. And I think that's the way it's going to go back to. I don't want to be like a steady draw every day, 7 days a week, like it could be. I think it's going to go back to, you know, the Saturday race day. And, again, that brings all the sponsors back out because they can sponsor events. And, you know, different things that you have to track. So I think that's what's going to happen. One thing, October 2020 versus October 2019. October, it was just a phenomenal month. I don't know why. I don't know why, because it's kind of a, you know, just a regular race day at the track. So not a lot of outstanding, you know, big stake races, because you're leading up to the Breeders' Cup. You know, you're leading up to the Triple Crown. You're leading up to the Pegasus, you know, in January. So I really don't know what happened, you know, with that. In October of 2020, $920 million was bet on U.S. races, compared to $776 million that were in 2019. There was an increase of 19.71% in October on wagering on U.S. races. So that tells you a lot. That's a good indicator that there was a way to get the race product out to the public. And that evidently the ways that the distribution of the product has been was acceptable to the racing fan, and they had a 19% increase. And so now we got to go back, as it's been hindsight 2020, and see exactly, you know, where this increase spiked in, and develop on that, whether it's a distribution, whether it's social media, whether it's network coverage, you know, whether it's the internet. You know, there's a lot of things that have to be evaluated, and we have to build on that. And once we start building on that, we got to remember that we've got to do something to welcome the fans back in this building and everything. So that's going to be an interesting at the end of the year to see where it all, you know, where it all happened. In October of this year, we had $90 million in purses offered, compared to $91 million in 2019. So that was a 1.24% decrease in purses this year. We had 340 race days during October of 2020, and we had 334 during our October events in 2019, which was an increase of 1.80% for the horsemen. And the horsemen like that. You know, they got a few more extra days, better chance to earn some money for it. The U.S. races that we had this year were 2,853 races in 2020, 2,754 in 2019, which was an increase of 3.5%, 5.6% in racing. So, you know, in October, it appears that we were figuring a way out to handle the COVID and how to get more race days. Now, I know here in South Florida, Gulfstream never missed a beat when the COVID came in from the get-go. Gulfstream had the protocol down. They didn't ship a lot of horses in or out. They dealt with what they had on hand, and it turned out good for Gulfstream. You know, they might be the role model to follow, you know, during the COVID or any type of a situation like that. Because I know for a fact, Gulfstream did not miss a beat. You know, it worked for them. The starts in the U.S., we had 22,410 starts in 2020. We had 22,176. In 2019, which was a 1.06 increase in starts for U.S. racing. And the average field size, and now this is a very good indicator of how the horse business survived, how the thoroughbred trainers and owners and breeders and how the tracks survived. This is very crucial because you figure with a pandemic like that we had, you know, and it affected, you know how it affected everybody and all business shutting down and not being able to operate was this year. But the average field size in 2020 was 7.86. In 2019, it was 8.05, which was a minus 2.42% decrease for 2020. And I think that is just an amazing statistic right there in itself, because it proves that the thoroughbred racing industry could survive. Once we started seeing statistics like that, we realized that now we've got to build on that. And to have, you know, that type of field, you know, in 2019 and have a 2.42 decrease in the field size says a lot. Says a lot, you know, because we can always add to, you know, to the races. And I think that's what we're doing now. And the Breeders' Cup Day is going to be, it's going to be a proof of that. We've got a lot of large fields, a lot of full fields. We got horses from all over the world. 27 different international horses will be, you know, at Keeneland. And so that tells you a lot. The average wagering, is a tough one. Average wagering per race day in the U.S. in 2020 was 2 million $732,000. In 2019, it was $2,323,000. That it was the average race day wagering for, you know, at the track. It's a 17.60% increase. And that just goes to show you, you know, that again, it's all about distribution. How did the distribution affect, you know, the horse industry? Now, you remember, in 2019, there was no COVID. That was with full fan attendance. In 2019. You know, and here you have an increase in 2020 with the COVID and no fan attendance, and you got an increase of 17%. So, you know, that tells you that, again, it goes all back to distribution, and that's how it is. And so now we're getting all these indicators that are telling us what we need to work on in the horse industry, you know, to promote our product and get our product out, you know. So that's something that's going to be very interesting to see. The average purchase for a race day was $267,000 compared to $275,000 in 2019, and that was a 2.98% drop. So, you know, that says a lot right there. You know, the COVID did affect the purse distribution, but it didn't affect the wagering distribution. So maybe we can correct that. In the event you ever have anything like this again, keep the purses up there and keep the increase on the positive side as the indicators are. So I was just so pleased with the way the things turned out so far this year. You know, hindsight's 2020. You have to look at the future of what we're doing, you know, in our business close. Things that we have to do, you know, and all the indicators prove that it can be done. And that the most important factor that we have in our business is the fan. How do we get our product to the fan? And it all goes back to distribution. You know, how do we get it out to the fan? Make it easy and convenient for the fan. You know, that's what we have to do, you know, with it. And I think the product that we're serving to the racing industry is great. We've got a lot of great trainers, great owners, jockeys, grooms, hot walkers, exercise riders, farms, racetracks. You know, we have everything, you know, that's right there. And, you know, we're making it nice to have the families out, to have the fans back in. And, you know, I remember when I was a little kid, growing up in southern Indiana, we kids weren't allowed at the racetrack. You know, you can go to the racetrack. And I remember my dad and my Uncle Morris went to the 1962 Kentucky Derby, and they were in the infield, and there were probably 1,000 people, if that. You know, and it just goes to show you how fast the sport grew, and it grew through market, you know, the Churchill Downs and all the racetracks. And my dad used to drive us around on Derby Day. We would leave and we'd go over and drive around Churchill Down, all the side streets, and we'd get to see all the people going into to the track, and we'd get to see the Twin Spires. And so that's where my love for the races became, you know, and instillment. And to this day, whenever I go to the track, I don't go directly, you know, to the stable gate back to the barn. I like to ride around the track, see what all's around. You know, to do that because it's part of history. And you see how the people live and what they do and you know, things of that nature. I was very fortunate, you know, to be at Hollywood Park in its closing day and see what it was like in Hollywood Park. You know, those are good memories there that I had. But I did take time to go around the community in Hollywood Park and see it. And same thing with Santa Anita and Del Mar, you know, Woodbine in Canada. You know, I got to see all the things. So that kind of gave me a better understanding of the business. And now You know, I understand how important distribution. You got to get to those people, but the hardworking people come out to watch the horses. And if you can make it a little bit easier for them to watch horse racing, like you can nowadays with technology, that's the greatest thing in the world. We'll get the fans back in the stands, and make every Saturday a special Saturday, making a horse Saturday. You know, that's what we're going to need to do in the business. I was really thinking about all these things over the last few days and came up, and then the Blood Horse put out their October report, which what we're taking our information from is the Blood Horse. I was just amazed because here I was feeling bad about the horse business being under COVID rules, and then I start looking at statistics, and hey, wait a minute, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was, you know. So that shows me how much I know, about the industry. And I'm not saying it was just me. I tell you what, I think what's been read by all the top notch people, by the Baffords and the Lucas and everybody, I think it's going to surprise them too, because we were so concerned with the COVID, and still are. Concerned with it. Yeah, but yet, when you start reading the statistics, it's not that bad. You know, so I was excited to read all this. It shows us hope for the future and what we're doing. So I was really good. I'm a happy camper. And then one of the things that we're getting ready to talk about here real quick is how they get there. That's going to be our little talk on a derby, our trek to the derby with our documentary, How They Get There. But before we go into that, I want to just touch base on this, and which I've known Todd Fletcher for a long time, and worked with him when I was at D. Wayne Lucas' school. And he's also in our Palm Beach Downs facility. The Palm Beach Downs facility is here in Delray Beach, Florida. It's run by Brandon Mills. And I'll tell you what, Brandon has got this track tuned in. He's been here for the last 6 years, and he's changed the track now tremendously. And this is why Todd Fletcher has been with us for quite a while. And which we're glad to be a part of it, Todd's program. And it's exciting, to know that every day when you pick up a racing form, you're going to see a Todd Fletcher horse running in a stake race or running somewhere and, could be winning. And speaking of wins, Todd Fletcher is approaching 5,000 wins as the Breeders' Cup year. Todd's had almost 5,000 wins in his career. So it's going to be interesting to see when he gets that 5,000th win. On November 7th, he has some nice horses running. And I think they're going to be top contenders for time. You have to tune in and watch and see what he's going to do, on Breeders' Cup Day. I tell you, 5,000 wins, my friend, is an awful lot. And it just goes to say, show you, not only does he have the talent as a trainer and a businessman, to get the job done, the staff that he has over the years, and it's his owners that he has, it's the blacksmith, it's the feed company, it's everything involved with the horse business, which you're going to see along how they get there, the High Union documentary 2021 Kentucky Derby. You're going to see all these things. What makes these guys super trainers like Todd and Bob Baffert and Dean Lane Lucas? You're going to see all of this. And there are 5,000 wins in North America. That's scary when you think about it. Guy's 53 years old. Do the math. You go back over the last 25 years and do the math on 5,000 wins, but he has to win every month, every year, to get where he got. you know, to be in a position to win 5,000 races. Most stocks, such as the runners on Friday and Saturday, are at 8-1 odds or higher in the morning line. It's an indication of how deep and classy this week's races will be at Keeneland. You know, it's just it's amazing. You got a guy like him who comes in, and you know, he's got top-notch horses that can, you know, he can win, and they're 8-1. You know, the average is 8-1. So that just tells you what kind of competition is going up there again. And just to, you know, letting you know, he's got 5,000 wins. You know, and if you're going into big races like this, it, you know, not as favorites, you know, but, you know, as an average, you know, horse going in there, 5,000 wins, that's an awful lot. You know, and so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what he comes up with this Friday and Saturday. You know, it came up in the Breeders' Cup. So now we want to talk a little bit here real quick about the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. This is part of our documentary, how they get there, and you can see these horses in our documentary. You will hear from the trainers and the jockey before and after, you know, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And like I said earlier, you know, on the show, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile is where I'm focusing on as the start. It's kind of like the NASCAR season. You know, every race is important, but, you know, and towards you get towards the Derby, you know, of course, they naturally get more and more and more important because it's knocking the field down to, you know, to the 20 that are going to start. You know, that type of thing. So, you know, we're looking at a lot of foals every year that start out, you know, in the business, and it goes down to 20. And this is really the first real test for the, how they get there and the road to the Kentucky Derby. It's every horse that's been here and seasoned. You know, you're looking at a $2 million race. It's a grade one. The post time is 5:15. P.M. on Friday, you know, for the $2 million Breeders' Cup Juvenile presented by Thoroughbred Aftercare and Lion. One of the things that I was looking at the other day was the field, how big the field is. 14 horses. So that tells you that you got 14 owners. Plus, depending on, you know, the syndication of horses. But you got 14 horses, and you got 14 trainers, 14 jockeys. And every one of these horses have done something to indicate that they are Breeders' Cup worthy. How they get there, whether it came from, you know, the West Coast, East Coast, or it comes from Europe. You know, just where it has come from. You know, they've all done something to measure, meet the standards of getting to, you know, to the Breeders' Cup on, or getting onto the road to the Kentucky Derby is what they've done. And, you know, when you look in here, you've got Jane McPeak's got two horses in there. You know, you look, Top Fletcher's there, Brad Cox is there. Steve Ashby, some backers, Dale Roman, Leslie Ward. Leslie Ward's usually a turf trainer, you know, but Leslie's got a two-year-old in there. And, you know, you never can tell. You know what he might do. But evidently, this is Leslie's horse has indicated to him that he can run on the dirt. And so that's going to be interesting to see. And as I scale down through here and look at it, we got Jackie Gloria, which we talked about earlier in Matthews. He's 75. And everything that he's done to this point has indicated that he is the best two-year-old in the country. You know, this horse is going to be phenomenal. Hopefully, his bloodline is right there. Saying that hopefully he breed the best you get the best. But Jackie's Warrior, he's Kentucky bred, famous Steve Asmussen, and he said Joel Rosario on him, and he's 75. And like I said, I'm not a gambler, not big into it. The only reason I'm telling you what the odds are is and letting you know that they've been selected in that order as far as their accomplishments are. To this date, you know, here with them. So we have Jackie's Warrior coming from post position 7 at 75. And so then our next horse that's on our list here is Brad Cox, which we talked about earlier. The Central Quality with Saez on he's affordable. And Central Quality, to me, is a horse I think that's on the climb. This horse is just getting nothing but better and better and better. And I think he's going to enjoy a nice rest after the Breeders' Cup, and he's going to be popping back up, hopefully here in South Florida in the early 2021 on the road to the Kentucky Derby and for the Tampa Bay Derby, the Florida Derby, the Fountain of Youth, that type of thing. But again, like I said, Brad Cox, he knows what he's doing, and he loves Keeneland. Brad loves Keeneland, and so does his horse. Then the other one, our third choice would be a reinvestment rent, another Kentucky Brad. It's trained by Chad Brown. He's at 9-2. He's got Ortiz in the saddle. Those are the top three right there that we have. That really stand out. That really caught the eye of everybody else. But yet again, you got to remember one thing. We're talking about 2-year-olds. We're talking about a full field. We're talking about, breaking out of a gate with 14 horses. It's going to be interesting to see how they run, how they act. But again, it's the crowd factor. You got to remember this down the road. You got to remember that there are no fans in Keeneland. So this race is just going to be strictly a 1-on-14. You come out of the gate, the best athlete's going to win. The best athlete's going to win this race. That's for sure. It's going to be a jockey's race. To see what we have there. And then as we go down the road, when they start letting fans back into the races, that's going to add into the whole racing factor. If they're back at full speed, in Churchill on Derby Day, you got 100,000 plus fans there. You got to make a note. Remember, Breeders' Cup, no fans. Arkansas Derby, some fans. Florida Derby, some fans. Churchill Downs, full load of fans. That'll play a lot on how these horses act and what they do and everything. But that's going to be 5:15 on Saturday, on Friday, November 6th. You'll have to go to Breeders' Cup. Go to IENTV.org. You'll be able to see it there. You'll be able to see it all over the place. Because like we said, it's all about distribution and everything. So there is one horse that I just want to touch on real quick. And the only reason I'm doing this is because I know a guy named Charlie, and Hot Rod Charlie. He's at 30-1. He comes out of 12 folks on Friday. He's got Tyler Jeff Leone in the saddle. And I think this horse might be one of those guys that, one of those horses that, is going to run like he's made. Hot Rod Charlie might be the best race he ever runs, and you never see him again, or you never can tell. He might be in Churchill, for Saturday in May. So tune in to, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile 5:15 on Friday, November 6th. Pick out your horses and pick two or three out and see if they make it to the Kentucky Derby. And then in spring of 2021, tune in to how they get there, and you'll see all the ways that it things that it takes to get the horses to the 2021 Kentucky Derby. Folks, that's it for us for today. We appreciate anybody that tuned in. And if you didn't, then I don't know what to say. I can't get in trouble. So we'll look forward to listening, talking to you next week, listening to you, call in, do whatever, and we'll give you a recap of the 2020 Breeders' Cup from Phoenix and Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks for tuning in.